This is an interview with Judge Michael Gerchak for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program by Michael Graham at his office in Youngstown on December 11th, 1991 at 2 p.m.
I'm ready.
Okay, why don't we begin with something not too difficult. Why don't you tell me about your childhood, growing up, where you were born, things such as that.
All right. I'm one of seven living children, next to the last, and I spent a real varied childhood, most of it from the south side of Youngstown, although for about 6 years I lived on a farm in an area called Fowler, Ohio, which to me was probably one of the most pleasant interludes in my life. I lived in an era when it was not unusual for kids to work their way through high school, let alone through college, so I played high school football and baseball at South High and worked in a variety of places, including a fish market in downtown Youngstown. I worked for a defunct grocery chain at that time known as the Century Foods while I was in high school. Spent a little better than a year and a half in the U.S. Air Force and was discharged honorably with tore up my knee while I was in the service, and Uncle Sam decided that it was more expendable to discharge me than it was to continue to treat me, so I was discharged and immediately started college. Prior to that time, I had worked for the Youngstown Sheet and Tube before joining the service for a very, very short time, and immediately upon returning from the service, I went back to my old job, and which at that time was U.S. Steel, Youngstown Sheet and Tube, but the wire mill in Struthers, where I worked the afternoon turn and went to school that had 8 o'clock classes. Usually had classes from 8 till usually noon. Caught the bus, came home, and my mom made my lunch, and I caught a bus and went to work. And fortunately, the job was of such a nature that I got about 3 or 4 hours free time during the day to do my study. After graduating from college, I went to work for the federal government as a bank examiner for a period of about 9 months, and started law school at Ohio State. When they found out that I was also a law school student, I was requested that I either had to choose either drop out of law school or resign my position as a bank examiner, and I chose the latter at that time. I ultimately finished my law degree at Youngstown State University, and we were the next to the last class from Youngstown State Law School. I graduated, actually we finished our course of study in March of 1959. We got our degree in June of 1959, and we took the bar examination in July of 1959, and I was admitted in either September or October of 1959, where I practiced law in Mahoney County since February of 1960. While in law school, I worked for Allstate Insurance Company as a claims examiner for approximately the last 2 years of my law school, and worked for them until February of 1960, at which time I then joined the law firm at that time known as Sheriffs, Jones & Moore in the Mahoning Bank Building. I remained with them until such time as Mr. Jones was elected to the Court of Appeals, and Mr. Sheriffs retired, I believe, in 1965 or 66, and Mr. Moore retired in 67 or 68, and I became the sole attorney in the firm at that time. And I continued practicing law as a sole practitioner from 1960 until June 1st of 1991. In 1980, I was elected county judge, And I spent 1981 and 1982 as a county judge in Sebring, Ohio. I then moved to Boardman, Ohio, to the Boardman County Court in January of 1983. And I stayed there until January 7th of 1991. I was elected to the Court of Common Pleas to the fifth judgeship in November of 1991. The office was effective July 1st of 1991. I concluded my practice on June the 1st of 1991, closing my office that year after approximately 31 years of active practice. My practice consisted of basically civil litigation. I did no criminal work for the last at least 10 or 12 years, mainly because I was a county court judge and I felt it was inconsistent and somewhat of a conflict with being a county judge, so I deferred any criminal work and maintained strictly a criminal practice, civil practice. And my practice consisted of doing what we normally refer to as insurance defense work for several companies in the Tri-County area of Mahoning, Trumbull, and Columbiana County, with occasionally going over to Summit, Portage, and Stark County. It was a very pleasurable experience for me, and I've been sitting on the Common Pleas bench since the 1st of July of 1991.
Okay, let's go back a little bit. First of all, what did your parents do?
My dad had a variety of jobs. My dad was retired at the time. I think the last job that my dad had was with the city of Youngstown in the water department, where he'd worked for 4 or 5 years. My mom had never worked. We came from a close-knit family where we all helped one another. I have 3 other brothers and 3 sisters, and even to this day we're a very close-knit family, assisting one another whenever the occasion arose. It was not unusual in those days for the children to contribute to the household well-being financially, as they got married and moved out of the house, they no longer did that, but those that remained continued to help with the household expense. And in fact, while I was in college and living at home, I was required to pay room and board the same as my brothers prior to me who did not go to college did. I am the only college graduate in my family, mainly because I was the next to the last, and with the help of my brothers and my sisters, I was able to do it. But my dad probably had a 4th or 5th grade education in the old country. I'm a first generation. My dad was born in Poland and my mother was born in Czechoslovakia. And one of the most rewarding things in my life was in 1989, my brother and I and my nephew made a return visit to Poland and visited aunts and uncles of my dad. And if my dad were alive today, he would be, 1889, he'd be 102 years old.
Wow.
Actually, 103 in February, because his birthday in 1992, he was born in 1889, so that would have made him 103 years old. My dad lived to be a ripe old age of 86, I believe, 86 or 87. Hmm. My mother died at an early age of 51. But I grew up in an area which was called post-depression. I was at the end of the depression era. Basically, with the advent of World War II in 1940, I was approximately 9 years old at that time. And that was basically the end of the depression, so to speak. So we were tainted somewhat by, you know, our experiences during that period of time.
When were you in service?
1950 through 51.
What were your duties?
Actually, I had a multitude of duties. I played a little bit of service ball, and that's happened to be where I hurt my knee more than anything else. And after that, I had gone through airplane engine school in a place called Wichita Falls, Texas. I was transferred from there to an administrative job as one assistant postmaster. I was the third man in charge of the post office for the airfield at Wichita Falls, Lackland, not Alcan, the Wichita Falls Air Force Base, which at that time had approximately 50 or 60,000 men, and we used to get a tremendous amount of mail for processing, and it wasn't automated such as it is today. It was my job to make sure that the mail was distributed, and it was a very pleasurable job for me. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to go to Korea at that time because most of the fellows that I had gone to school with shipped off to Japan. And because I was having a reoccurring knee problem, I was being treated by the base. I had surgery on my left leg, and they didn't want to operate on my right leg, my right knee, so Uncle Sam saw fit that I was given a medical discharge in 1951.
What sport did you play?
Football.
Football?
Yes. Football, and in the service I played basketball. I hurt one knee in basketball and one knee in football. In those days, they had a tremendous rivalry amongst the services. Not anymore, but at that time, most of the big bases had athletic teams, basketball and football both. I don't recall if anybody having any baseball teams, but we all had basketball teams and football teams. The one Air Force base that I had left in East St. Louis, Chanute, had played Quantico Marines and also played the Naval Station at Pensacola. And many of those teams were college grads at that time and pro players who had been drafted or enlisted in the Army. So it was a very interesting period, for me anyway. I enjoyed it. I never got a chance to see combat, but that didn't upset me that much.
Tell me a little bit about the law school, why issues, or actually Youngstown College.
It was Youngstown College at that time. Having gone for a period of time to Ohio State for three semesters at that time, I didn't find it too much different, except that the classes were much, much, much smaller. There was much more time and much more communication between the instructor and the students. In fact, you had to be prepared on a daily basis because you were going to be called on a daily basis. I think when we graduated, our class had 14, 15 people in it. Had I stayed at Ohio State, the class would have had about 350. The instructors all knew you on a first-name basis, and you were called upon frequently for recitation in class. You were required to do the same thing. It was a night school at that time, but it was an accelerated night school. Because I started in September of 1955 and graduated in March of 1959. My graduating class from Ohio State in 1955 would have been done in June of 58. So I was approximately 9 months behind as a result of that. But we took the same bar exam as everybody else did, and we had an excellent passing rate. Youngstown was traditionally, in the upper 75% of the passing rates on the bar exam. I don't know if it was because the education and your scholarly pursuits were along those lines or what, but we had an extremely good passing ratio in the bar. which is something that some of the bigger schools didn't have. I felt I got a quality education at YSU.
Tell me about some of the instructors.
One of the instructors happened to be a common pleas judge, Judge Erskine Maiden Jr. Ray Falls was a teacher there. John Newman, who's still practicing law today, was one of our instructors. While Knowles Wyatt was one of the instructors, and Knowles was a very, very hard case type of professor. If you didn't, you weren't prepared to respond in his class in an intelligent manner, he would toss you out. You literally, you know, and for a grown man, and we had some students in our class at that time, because it was a night school, we had some students who were 40 and 50 years old who were Second World War veterans, and for them to be tossed out because they weren't prepared was somewhat of an ego thing, so everyone came prepared for Knowles Wyatt's class, because they didn't want to feel the wrath and be tossed out of class. We used to meet, the law school was where the restaurant is now, the old house across the street from the media center now. Oh golly, it's the...
The Pollock House?
The Pollock House, yes. Okay. Yeah, it was the William B. Pollock House. At that time it was not as big as it is, and that's where the law school was. We had the entire second floor. Law school was 12 months a year. It was not 9 months. We were on a semester basis, and they were quarterly semesters every 3 months. So you got no time off. You know, it was 12 months a year. Law school was 12 months a year. There were no summer vacations, such as you might have in college or somewhere else. But most of the gentlemen that I went to school with remain around town. There's so many of them, you know. I mean, Youngstown traditionally used to graduate probably 15 at most on an annual basis. And those 15 were easily assimilated into the private practice in Mahoney County. And I still see some of my classmates that I went to school with.
Why did the law school close?
Well, at that time, YSU did not have ABA sanction. That's the American Bar Association sanction. And in order to do so, they had to hire a full-time faculty. And we had started on that. I think Youngstown had hired, in our last year and a half, had hired 4 full-time professors. However, in addition to that, there was a requirement of a law library. And at that time, Youngstown had the old library, which I don't know whether it was torn down or not. But I know they have the new library, which faces onto Wick Avenue. Prior to that, they had built another rather substantial library up where the Begley Center is, or across the street from where the Begley Center is. And I think they may have demolished that one and built something else there. But in any event, they weren't willing to give up the space. The association from the university was not willing to give up the space required for a law library, and there was a hue and cry that we were pumping out too many lawyers at the time, and the fact that Akron Law School had started recruiting students. And so as a result of that, the Board of Trustees felt they could close the law school, and they did in 1960. That was the last year. I think the last graduating class was 1960 at YSU.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about, where'd you live in Miami?
I lived in Fowler, actually.
Okay.
A place called Tyrrell Hill. T-Y-R-E-L-L.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Alma?
I used to live out there, yeah.
Oh, did you? Where?
Yeah. Warner Road.
Okay.
Which is kind of in Brookfield, but I...
You must know the Bradleys, then.
I think I do.
Well, I grew up with Jack and his brother Bill. Jack and his family live on Warner Road, just there at Five Points, if you know where Five Points is. I think everybody knows where Five Points is out there. You know, that's, well, we lived about 3 miles away from there. Where'd you live, between 82 and Sodom Hutchins Road?
No, actually I lived down.
You lived south of 82 then?
Yeah.
Okay.
What did your family do out there when they moved out?
Well, my dad worked in town, my brothers worked in town, and we ran a small farm. At that time, I think there were about 80-some acres. We had half a dozen milk cows, and we sold milk, and my mother and I, the family, raised chickens. We raised our own food, had a small orchard, raised our own grain, so to speak, our, you know, family, stuff like that, your normal staple, like potatoes and stuff like that, and sweet corn. And we did sell sweet corn because my dad started raising sweet corn, and then during the summer, the end of summer, we would drive into town and sell sweet corn out of the back of a car in those days. Do you know anybody out there? You went to what, Brookfield?
No, actually, I went to school more.
Oh.
But, yeah. We moved away from there probably 10 years ago.
Well, I used to go hunting out there, so I knew everybody, you know. There were about 7 or 8 Bradley boys, you know. They used to have a nursery on King's Grave Road. King's Grave or Sodom Hutchins? Sodom Hutchins runs what, north and south, and King's Grave runs east and west, yeah. Okay, yeah, Warner Road and King's Grave is Five Points. And Sodom Hutchins, that's what I lived on. I lived on Sodom Hutchins Road.
Okay.
Which is actually the next road over from Warner Road.
Right.
And at that time we had a railroad train that ran through, the New York Central ran through our property. As I understand, I've been out there, I haven't been hunting in 5 years, but the last time we were out there, all of the tracks are gone. The spur, you know,
yeah. There
is no more railroad.
Were you out there were you living out there when the railroad ran?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. In fact, we lost a cow to the railroad, because our pasture was divided by the damn track, you know. I mean, and occasionally when we'd put them over, we had about 8 acres on the other side of the track, which was pasture land, and my dad would... sometimes when we turned the cows loose in the morning, we'd have to actually move them all the way across the track, drive them across the track, close the gate. One of them got out somehow or another, the gate was, and the train hit it and whacked it. And that was the end of the cow. But the railroad had a right of way through part of our property. But it was interesting, you know. I was a little kid. I was in grade school at that time, and as I said, the formative years of your life, if they're ruralistic, you know, you have a different outlook. Things of nature don't bother you as much as they do city kids, you know. It was nothing for me to kill a chicken, you know what I mean, because that was part of our routine. Kids in the city would never think of killing a chicken. So it was a lot of fun. For me it was, as I recall, you know.
Yeah.
It was a hard, austere life in those days, you know. We went to Fowler High School. Fowler School, actually. It's now a grade school, part of the Matthews school system. But at that time, it was 1 through 12.
What grades were you in there?
I was there from the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and half of the 7th.
Okay. Why'd you move back?
The war was over. My grandmother had died. My mother was left a part owner of her house in the south side of Youngstown in Lansingville, an area, if you're familiar with it, where that's at, that's up off of Indianola. And my mother got tired of living on the farm and didn't want to stay anymore, and so we sold the farm and we moved and lived in my grandmother's house for about a year and a half. And we moved to the lower south side, and where I went to Hillman Junior High and South High School.
Did you play sports in high school?
Yes, I played football and baseball.
Oh, you play baseball?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, let's move on a little bit. Why don't you talk to me about your early career, your early law career. How did you feel in your first big trial case?
Very nervous, as most lawyers do. I was fortunate, you know, in the sense that, you know, I came into a law firm that needed somebody to do the work, basically. You know, Mr. Sheriff didn't go to court, and Bo Jones had all he could handle, and Mr. Moore ran a tavern across the street called Moore's Tavern at that time, and Joe was more interested in being a musician and a bar owner than he was in a lawyer, so I got to do all of the legal work, and I got my fill real quick in my experience because I was, I think I'd been with them about a week and a half, and they threw me a file and said, you know, go try this case. And needless to say, it's quite a traumatic thing because in law school they taught you the technical aspects and the book learning without the practical experience. I didn't know where to go, basically. I had to ask people, where's courtroom number 3 and who's the judge? And of course, when the judge found out that this was my first trial and that I'd just been a lawyer for 6 months, there was an awful lot of preferential treatment to me by the judge. And he would object when I didn't make a motion or didn't object. He would sustain an objection that I didn't make to make sure my skirts were covered. But it's a business you learn and you mature into because it takes a while to get that experience. Different courts require different attitudes, and you learn the nuances of the judge, what he expects and what he doesn't expect. And you have to earn your respect that way from them. They're not going to give it to you unless they know you're a worker. And it forces you to be a worker if they're going to try cases. It was very rewarding. It was very difficult to sustain and maintain or create I practice a lot. It takes a lawyer approximately, in most days, 5 to 10 years to develop a decent practice where he made a decent living out of it. I was fortunate in the sense that I was with a firm that had a lot of work and no workers. So then when Mr. Sheriffs retired in 1968, I ended up with the whole ball of wax in my own lap, and it was a godsend to me. It was very advantageous to me because I was able to make a very decent living at it. And then I got the political bug. Kind of like as a lark. Someone said, why don't you run for county judge? And I decided to run, and I ran, and there were 6 guys, 3 incumbents, and 3 other candidates, and out of a field of 6, I ended up 6th. And then Judge Zlotnick ran the next 2 years later. There were 4 county judges. 3 of them ran at one time, and 1 ran separately. And when Judge Zlotnick's term came up, somebody else talked to me and said, you know, you got to run. You don't want to waste all that time and money you did in the last time. So kind of like a half-hearted thing, I decided to do so. And in this event, I spent a lot of my money doing media advertising and spent more time, basically, campaigning. And I was very successful at it. I beat an incumbent. And then got reelected, then got elected to this job in this November of 91. There were 6-year terms.
Are you interested in politics, or no? Is that just the medium to get?
That's the only medium that, you know. No, I'm not interested in politics. You know, judicial candidates have a hard time being politicians because it's a nonpartisan ticket, except of course when there's a primary. You have to politic to win because you have to get votes to win, and you can't get votes to win unless you politic. So.
Is that difficult?
Yes, it's hard work. Uncle, it's hard work. Given what I know today, I'm not sure that I would do what I did. You know, because I thoroughly enjoyed the practice a lot, and I think it's kind of like a challenge. It's just another challenge, and had I not won, I don't think I would have been brokenhearted by any stretch of the imagination. Having won, I don't know what I won. You know, the common pleas bench is a much slower pace than I had been used to.
How are you adjusting?
Reluctantly. You know, I'm looking for work constantly. because my nature, I've always, you know, worked my way through high school, worked my way through college, worked my way to law school. And, you know, as a practicing lawyer, you can expect anywhere from 60 to 80 hours a week. Work Saturdays if necessary, Sundays if necessary, and what's necessary on more than one occasion. And you get into that work ethic of, you know, constantly having a progression of things to do. Here you're at the mercy of the assignment office who sets your cases for you, and you have no control over that. And when cases are either settled or continued, you have nothing to do during that period of time except to review paper matters that are before the court, which I do continually, but it's not very interesting. And sitting on the bench and listening to lawyers present their cases, where the only interest you have as a judge is merely to make sure that the rules are adhered to. You have no financial interest, no competitive interest in the outcome of the case. It makes it kind of a little more difficult, especially if you've always been a competitive lawyer. Now you're in a non-competing role, totally. Non-adversarial, either, for that matter. You know what I mean? You're supposed to be independent and unbiased. So it's difficult to sit there and sustain conversation. I mean, sustain concentration. So I do a lot of my paperwork while the trials are going on, which is not unusual. I find a lot of the other judges do the same thing.
Do you find it difficult to remain impartial sometimes?
Sure you do. In civil cases, it's not so bad because, you know, I don't have any input into the decision. That's mainly and basically the jury's problem to decide the facts. The judge just supplies the law, and that's really not all that hard. But it is difficult sometimes to maintain that independence that you have to get because, you know, lawyers who I've known all my life come through the court system, and, you know, I've eaten lunch with them, gone out with them, played golf with them, do all those things, and now suddenly I'm supposed to divorce myself from them, and it's very difficult not to be, or to be totally unbiased and independent. It is difficult that way. But, you know, you school yourself at least to maintain as best you can, you know, that posture. I try never to be dishonest. I think, you know, if you have the philosophy of being treated the same way as you would like to be treated on the other side of the bench, I think that's about the best philosophy I can, and I try to do that. I tell the lawyers, look, I'm not going to give you any kind of treatment except the same as if I'd expect if you were sitting here and I were standing there. I'm not going to give you any advantage, nor am I going to create a disadvantage for you. And I think lawyers appreciate being treated fairly. Nobody wants to be given a preferential treatment because you don't get it from all the judges, and, you know, you got to deal with all of them. So if you're fair to an individual, that's basically the judge's job. Just maintain that doctrine of fairness.
Why don't we run through a typical day for you? Start out with, you know, when your alarm goes off until you go to sleep at night. Run through a typical day.
Yeah. I'll give you an example of today. We had a jury trial, as you know, you were in here yesterday or the day before, whenever day it was. What, today's what, Wednesday? You were here, what, Monday?
Monday.
Okay, well, we started on Monday. Normally, I arrive here about 8:20 in the morning. Court starts at 9 o'clock. We usually, many times, have hearing scheduled at 8:45, such as a conference with the lawyers. We may have a plea or a small hearing that may only take 15 minutes. But, you know, the court starts basically at 9 o'clock. This morning I got here about 8:15, mainly because we were involved in a trial. I had prepared the law charge for the lawyers on the other side yesterday afternoon while they were conducting their trial. And secretary had typed it up, made copies for them, and when we closed